down to the trap, but the joint was closed. Lately they've been dropping like dominoes. All my favorite watering holes are drying up. The Lord loves the drinking man. He sent honky-tonk angels to the promised land. I hear that he can turn the water to wine. Any man that can do that, oh, he's a good friend of mine. I've been baptized in beer, I'm here to testify. I was speaking in tongues when I came home last night. Some folks say I'm living in sin, but I know the Lord loves the drinking man.
Today.
I'm doing good.
Good. With us right now is Mark Chestnut, and of course his new CD is called Saving the Honky Tonk. I loved it, and I love the new single from it too. It's great.
Thank you. I appreciate that. We've been wanting to record that one for about 3 years, and finally got the opportunity when I signed with Vivitone Records. They weren't afraid to put out drinking songs.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about that. I you were on a major label for a long time, had a lot of hits, and then kind of get dropped. That happens when album sales don't go as well. But when you're on a major label, how much actual control do you have over the creative material you're putting out?
Almost zero. I mean, it was in the beginning. It was really nice. You know, I was the label I was with. It was really wanting traditional country songs. Man, we had drinking songs, cheating songs, rowdy stuff. But then all of a sudden, it just somebody in Nashville had a big hit with something that was more pop sounding, and then suddenly it wasn't the thing to do. We all had to go and do what the other guy was doing.
Right. So you started doing things like Diane Warren songs.
Yeah, well, you know, everybody decided, well, they wanted to cross over. They wanted to be less country. And I never could figure that out. I had the hardest time. And I recorded some good country songs on my albums, but they were never singles after the first three or four singles, you know.
Yeah, I think what happened is, you know, you see the Shania Twain thing happening and the Dixie, whatever they are there, and you know, they all cross over and become these big pop stars. And I think that the record labels were smelling more money rather than serving the people who really wanted to listen to country music.
Right. All of a sudden, you couldn't be happy with gold. You had to be multi-platinum, and so everything got a little out of hand. You know, the budgets went way out of sight, and you just had to sell, you know, 5 million albums to turn a profit.
Right. I kind of love some of the old songs, though. I mean, songs like Bubba Shot the Jukebox, you know, these are great songs.
Yeah, well, there's a market for those songs, and finally, the labels in Nashville are noticing that again, you know, that it's okay to sell gold or a platinum album now. And also, the market has opened up again for guy songs, because I remember a few years ago I was being told, you know, hey, you got to really find some really good positive love songs. And I'm sorry, but love is not always a positive thing, you know.
No, I prefer songs like The Lord Loves the Drinking Man and Beer, Bait, and Ammo myself, but, you know.
Yeah, well, me too. And finally, after messing around with all these major labels, you know, the indies all of a sudden started having hits, started getting songs played on the radio, where 10 years ago that was almost unheard of.
I think that the internet age and also the distribution channels have opened that opportunity up to some of these, you know, independent labels.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely, that's happened. And so when I left Sony, you know, I was with MCA for 10 years, MCA Decca, and then I went to Sony and had the same problem there. And so this time I decided I was going to do this my own way. I was going to do my own thing, because I'm out there on the road every day, and I talk to the fans, and I know what the people that come to my shows want me to sing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll go out and buy a Tim McGraw or Faith Hill record or Shania Twain album, but when they want to hear Mark Chestnut sing, they want to hear Too Cold at Home and An Old Country and Bubba Shot the Jukebox, things like that.
Right.
And so that's something I think that a lot of the guys that I used to deal with in Nashville just didn't get. if it was successful for Garth Brooks, then we all had to do that. And that's just not right. But I can understand where they were coming from. They were only trying to make money and survive. But the music matters more now. I think the audience now, they're getting what they want again. You know, Toby Keith doing his kind of rowdy stuff. And so I decided, well, that's what I'm going to go and find me some songs, spend my own money, and do a four-song project and bring it to the labels in Nashville and say, hey, this is what Chestnut is now, you know.
Yeah.
We're pretty much back to basics. And so when I did that, the labels, of course, that I brought it to said the same thing. Oh, that's great. We love those songs. They sound incredible. But, you know, we don't know if we could get that stuff played.
Yeah, that's...
So
yeah,
I immediately...
Yeah.
Started thinking indie, you know, and my old friend Sheila Shipley, that I had all my success with at MCA, she's the vice president over there of the label. So I immediately went over to see her, and after they heard my four song demo, which by the way has The Lord Loves a Drinking Man on it, first song, they immediately said, well, you know, we ain't scared of that. That's what we should be putting out as country music. And so I got the go-ahead and went into the studio and recorded, you know, 10 more songs. Ended up with 15 on the album. 14 and a half, really.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I find interesting, there's a dichotomy here between being on a label like a Sony, where they can do so much for you, and you know, I'm sure that there's the limousines and the champagne and there's more money involved, but on the other hand, your creative juices are stifled, as opposed to maybe being in an independent and maybe not making as much money or having fancy fringe benefits, but being happier. I mean, what's the dichotomy? What's the comparison there between the two?
Well, with the, I don't know about anybody else, but with my experience, I didn't even take an advance when I signed with Vivitton. We just said, hey, let's put all the money we have into the promotions, into this project. Let's get this thing happening. You know, I'm not impressed with limousines and champagne and first-class seats and, you know, high-dollar stuff. You know, going to these, being taken to these high-dollar steakhouses and all, you know who pays for that eventually? The artist.
Right, that's right.
And, of course, when you start out, the artist they don't know that, but that comes out of your budget. And so we're bare bones. I mean, we have the label has the money to do things like the majors, but we don't want to spend the money that we don't have to spend. We'd rather put it towards promotion, and that's why we have 15 songs on this album, and that's why it sounds so good. That's where the money went. You know, now we're putting money into promotions and to get the sales to where we need to be, and that's one thing that's different. The other thing, that there's no corporate level with this label. When you walk into their offices in Nashville, that's the whole label. You know, they're all there, except for a couple of the regional promotion guys. But the whole all the businesses ran right there in Nashville. When you walk in, you talk to the president, you talk to the main man, you talk to the main woman that's running the label. And they're very music. They're very smart with their music. They have a great knowledge of country music and what fans want to hear in country music. And you know, they're going to probably sign a few other acts. Of course, I know they are. That aren't going to be as country as I am. But they do. They get what Mark Chestnut is, and that's honky tonk traditional country.
Now let's go back in time with Mark Chestnut to Beaumont, Texas, where you were born. How did you end up, getting into music? I know your dad was an influence. Tell us a little bit about growing up, how you learned to play the guitar and the drums and music, and some of the influences you had when you were a kid.
Well, my daddy was the first singer I ever heard, and he was a great singer and songwriter, and he had some connections in Nashville. I remember him going to Nashville and staying 2 or 3 days, but he never could really be going away from home long, because he had to get back and go to work. He had a wife and 2 little boys to raise, and he was barely making ends meet, you know. And so it was tough for him to just give it all up and go to Nashville and try to make it as a country singer. So he messed with it for a lot of years and just realized that he wasn't going to give up his family. He wasn't going to leave us home all the time. So he gave it up. He gave up his dream and came home and stayed home and raised his family. And he taught me I was always interested in music. I loved music. My daddy did all the traditional country music, loved Hank Williams. Daddy introduced me to Hank Williams, George Jones, Merle Haggard. And my mama, she loved Elvis Presley, Fats Domino, those guys. And my brother, 5 years older than me, of course, he was into the rock bands, you know, Aerosmith and ZZ Top and those guys in the early 70s. And so I got a little bit of everything. And then as soon as I was old enough, well, for some reason, I picked up the drums. I just loved the drums. And Daddy always made sure that I had a decent set of drums once he knew I could play them. And my brother played lead guitar, and we just used to play and sing together all the time.
Do you still play drums at all when you're in concert?
Not in the shows, no. I beat around on them here at the house. My son is a drummer also. He's 9 years old, and he has a set of drums, and he's really good. And I'll go up there and play on his drums every now and then. But he's really a good little drummer. But
so he's going to follow, you think, in Dad's path there and maybe get in the music biz too?
Well, I don't know. You know, he wants to, and my 7-year-old loves. He wants to play the guitar and the piano, and he loves to make up songs. So maybe he'll be the one to write songs. I keep telling him that's where the money's at, and writing, publishing, not the singing.
That's true. Did your dad live long enough to see the success you've had? Hello. Hello. So, Mark, did your dad live long enough to see the success you've had?
Yeah, he was there through the beginning. You know, he was with me all the way. I would go to Nashville and spend about a week there. I had some friends that lived there that I knew through some friends here. And so I'd go up there and stay a while, and I'd find some songs, come home and record them. And my dad would put some money up, and we'd go to Houston and record, and we had a couple independent record companies that we made records for in San Antonio and Houston. And but he was there through the whole thing, and he saw everything happening. He was really nervous. I could tell he was really worried about what I was getting into, because he knew kind of what was happening in the industry, and he knew what I was going to be in for. But he was kind of happy, but at the same time, I think he was really worried. But he lived long enough to see me have my first initial success with Too Cold at Home, and he saw things take off in a pretty big way for me.
That's great. Yeah, well, that's something that I wanted to talk to you about, that, because I mean, here you were, you signed your first deal with MCA, your debut album comes out, Too Cold at Home, in 1990. What was it like first hearing yourself on the radio and having your first album out? It must have been just amazing.
It was. It was really weird for me. It was kind of everything I thought it would be, and a lot worse.
How was it worse?
Well, I thought, man, once you get a record deal and you have a hit record, you're set for life, man. You're ready. You're going to be wealthy and famous for the rest of your life. And that's just not the way it is. I'd always said when I was a kid listening to my heroes, thinking, boy, if I could just get me a record deal with a major label, then I'm there, dude. But you know, my career was launched, but the work had not even started yet.
But it's interesting to know. I mean, that first album, Too Cold at Home, obviously the title track became a country top five hit. Then Brother Jukebox, Blame It on Texas, Your Love is a Miracle, Broken Promised Land. All of a sudden, boom, 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 boom. And by the time that was done, then the second CD came out, Long Necks and Short Stories. And again, you know, Bubba Shot the Jukebox and a bunch of other great songs, I'll Think of Something, came out. So you had like 9 or 10 straight hits in a row after just putting out two albums.
Yeah, it's amazing to think back on that. But that one thing, you know, back in those days, we were putting out about 5 singles a year, plus, you know, an album a year.
Mm-hmm.
Things are totally different now. But it went really, really fast. And all of a sudden, I was on I was on Letterman and Jay Leno and any TV show on major networks that I could get on. And it was a big blitz for a while, and I thought, man, I'm set. But it was real hard to stay, to compete with what was going on at the same time. And all of a sudden, here comes Garth Brooks.
Uh-huh.
And then you couldn't be just a regular country singer anymore. It was, then it got kind of strange. But it always seemed like, after about the third album, it seemed like it was a struggle to stay in the industry. It was a struggle to stay on the charts. It wasn't like I thought it would be. I thought, well, I'll be set, you know, for at least 5 years. But about the third album, I really had to start trying to stay in the business, trying to stay current, because what was cool for my first two albums wasn't as cool for the third album. That's when I was starting to hear from my producers and my record company.
Were you rewarded substantially for the? A lot of times when you sign your first contract, they kind of rip you off. Did you make a lot of money from these great hit albums? And I assume you wrote a lot of the songs as well, right?
I didn't write them. No, I didn't.
Did you? Oh, okay.
The songs, the money was not there. I mean, I got an advance to sign the deal and all that. But like you said, the champagne, the limousines, and all that stuff. Yeah, that'll take it out of you. You know that. I started noticing then where the money goes, who pays for all that cool stuff.
Right.
Well, I was paying for it.
Yeah. Yeah, they deduct it all. Yeah, when they're giving you the royalties, they deduct this and deduct that and deduct this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Kind of like a bank. So, I learned pretty quick what was going on, and it took me a lot of years to recoup all that. That's why with this label, I don't want them spending any money unless it's on promotions. You know, I don't need them to drive me around in limousines and all that.
How important is it for you to get, to be on the charts, to be number one, number five, and to have the thing heard? Is that as important as it is to just have people listen to your music and enjoy it?
Yeah, it's very important because without if you have a number one record, that means it's getting played a lot. It's playing a whole lot. If it's the more your singles heard on the radio, the more people are exposed to it, the more people know that you have a new album in the stores, and they're more likely to go out and buy the CD if they hear it all the time on the radio. And so that's the main reason that being up high on the charts like that is so important. To sell the album, that's another thing I learned, that you have to sell a lot of albums to stay in this business. No matter, I know guys that's had just a whole slew of number one hits that stayed number one 2, 3, 4 weeks in a row, didn't sell any albums. And so they were dropped by their label. Just because a song goes number one does not translate into album sales. And then on the other side of the coin, there's songs that's never made it out of the teens or 20s and sold platinum albums. So it all goes back to the song.
Yeah.
It all begins and ends with a song.
The song can also do you harm, because one of our friends here at PMP Network is Billy Ray Cyrus, who had that monster hit "Achy Breaky Heart" that crossed over to pop charts, and after that, he wasn't taken seriously as a country artist, even though he was putting out some amazing stuff.
That's a shame. That's really a shame. I think he was wronged by a lot of people and a lot of other artists in country music for some reason. Just were cutting him down and talking bad about him for no reason other than the guy had a huge success with a great little record that put him on the map. And then, like you said, for some reason, oh, that's Billy Ray Cyrus, that's the Achy Breaky guy. He was stereotyped, and that's just not fair for him.
Yeah, if you listen to his music, he's great. He's got some great stuff.
He's got a great voice. He had some great songs, and I just think he was screwed out of a huge career.
It just shows you sometimes about the industry itself. But it's nice that if you're now on a small label. He's also doing stuff independently as well. And sometimes you're better off like that because you can kind of set your own pace, do your own thing, and put out stuff you're comfortable with. And usually your fans are as well. I mean, the Mark Chestnut fans out there, they want to hear the stuff you're doing now.
Exactly. That's one of the main reasons I'm doing it, other than the fact that that's what I do best. You know, I tried to do some things like the Diane Warren song, and which is a great song, and the record came out great, but that's not Mark Chestnut. That's not what I want to do with my career, and I'm not ashamed of it, and I'm proud that I did it, but I'm a little upset with my former label for thinking, well, that's the role we need to take from now on.
Mm.
And instead of saying, okay, that was great, now let's cut a real country song now. They didn't see it that way.
Do you actually write any of your stuff?
Yeah, I was co-writing with my friend Roger Springer for a couple albums, for about three albums worth. And we hooked up together, and he's from Oklahoma, you know, and I'm from Texas. We got along real well, and we had the same background with the same musical heroes. So we co-wrote a lot of hits. You know, we wrote things like Thank God for Believers and It's a Little Too Late, and some things like that have been big hits for me.
Mm-hmm.
But that well ran dry when Roger decided he wanted a record deal, and he kind of quit writing with me, and his deal didn't work out, and he was aggravated with the business and took his money and moved back to Oklahoma and bought a big ranch out there. So,
have you thought about maybe working with your son and recording some of the songs together?
We tried. I tried to get back with him, but he just wasn't into it.
Mm.
I think he's living the domestic life. I really truly think that Roger just hates the business, hates the industry, and you know I don't blame him. It gets pretty weird sometimes, and I think he's happy what he's doing now. Basically, you know, he's still writing songs, but not like he used to. He's just doing what he wants to do, living out there in Oklahoma.
Yeah, I just think that we've talked to thousands of artists here at PMP Network, and it's quite obvious to me that even if you're not a writer, you should at least write one song on every album just for royalty's sake.
Yeah, well, I co-wrote the title cut on this album, Somebody Save the Honky Tonks. That's about the only thing that I've done in years, because that's because I was hanging out so much with my producer Jimmy Ritchie and came up with the idea of Saving the Honky Tonks with him.
Yeah. Now, so who's the writers of most of the songs that you actually do record, like on Saving the Honky Tonks CD?
Well, Jimmy Ritchie ended up with a lot of them just for the fact that he could write better shuffles than anybody else.
Hmm.
You know, we put the word out that we were looking for honky tonk drinking songs. Shuffles, you know, because a lot of times in Nashville, a label just don't want to record any shuffles. They might put one on an album every now and then. It hardly ever sees the light as a single, but we decided, you know, with my background and from what my fans want to hear, and, you know, I play a lot of shows, and I know that the people love shuffles, and I still do. And we were getting some shuffles, but most of them were old classic hits from way back in the 60s and all.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't want to remake anything like that. So we decided, well, let's. So Jimmy is a great writer, great musician, and he said, well, I'll write some shuffles and you know, try to top these, because these, we didn't think they were strong enough, the stuff we were getting, plus we didn't want to remake any classics. And Jimmy's a fiddle player, so who better to write a shuffle? And that's how I hooked up with Jimmy in the first place, because he pitched me a song called Don't Ruin It for the Rest of Us. And, you know, and that's a shuffle. And I thought, well, all right, well, I was hoping, man, I really hope he can write some good shuffles. Because, you know, I'm not going to record anything just because he's the producer.
I really like this CD. It's a great CD. And for folks, it's coming out in September, actually, officially, September 21st. But you can go to markchestnut.com. It's CHESNUTT.com. And get all the information. And also vivitonrecords.com, VIVATON records.com, for information on how to purchase this CD. Because it's some good stuff. I assume, and in fact, I know that on your website, you can also order a lot of your old stuff as well.
Yeah, we have a lot of great catalog. You know, I'm very proud of the body of work that I've had over the years. I've recorded some great country music, and even though a lot of it was never heard as singles, I'm very proud of a lot of the things I've done, because I think I've stayed true to my honky-tonk roots, and this new album just really puts it all into perspective for me, because it's the kind of music I grew up singing, and I know that there's still an audience out there, because I sing in front of them every night.
Hmm. Do you remember what the first song you ever wrote was?
That I ever wrote?
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. Way back in high school, I wrote a song called The Best of My Life, I believe it was. A horrible, cheesy ballad kind of thing. This is in the 70s now,
yeah.
You know.
Did you ever record it?
Everything was a little cheesy in the 70s. No, I never recorded it. I never put it out on a record. It was pretty good, I guess, for a guy my age back then. Well, I was probably about 16, but it wasn't country. It sounded more kind of 70s pop stuff, you know. But I was just learning how to play the guitar, so I thought it was pretty good for me anyway.
Well, I want to also wish you a happy anniversary. I know you just had your 12th anniversary.
Yeah, thank you.
Congratulations on that, you and Tracy. And now you mentioned the children, and one of your children is named Waylon Nelson. I assume that he's named after Waylon Jennings and Willie Nelson?
Well, you're right on one of them.
Waylon Jennings.
Named him. My wife was pregnant with our first son, you know, and this was 94. And I was making a record, and I thought it would be cool to have Waylon Jennings come in and do a remake of Rainy Day Woman. And so he came in and did it. We hung out all day, spent a lot of time together. And, you know, me being the fan that I was just thanking him so much, you know, and for him coming out there and doing that with me. And he said, I really enjoyed it, and all I want you to do in return for me, he said, just name that baby after me. And I don't know if he was kidding or anything, but I called my wife right after he left, and I said, let's name him Waylon. We already had another name picked out for him and all, but I can't remember what it was to this day. He's always been Waylon to me. And Nelson is my grandfather's first name.
Oh, okay.
No offense to Willie.
Well, that's okay, because, you could have said that anyway. It wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, we did name a dog after Willie Nelson.
There you go. Sure, Willie will appreciate that one.
Oh, yeah.
But that's great. Well, it sounds like to me like a couple of the kids might even follow in your footsteps, and there might be other chestnuts playing music for everybody.
It's very possible. They love music, and there's some talent there. And, you know, if they decide to do that, I'll support them the best way I can and help them in every way I can. But I really want them to get an education, go to college, and I really love to see them do something a little more stable.
Now, didn't you leave school at one point?
I quit school in my junior year because I was just so eat up with music. I couldn't do anything else. I didn't even have a girlfriend anymore. I was so consumed with country music. I was singing three nights a week in a club here in Beaumont, and my grades went to hell, basically. They were just terrible. Now, I'd always been a pretty good student, but music just took over my life, and my daddy and I argued for a long time about that, but he couldn't stop me. You know, he told me, he said, well, son, the only thing I'm going to do is I'm going to be there every step of the way to make sure that you keep your mind in the right place and that you don't get off track. And he did. He had to kick my butt many times when he saw me out there just raising a lot of hell and just partying too much. He saw what was going to happen if I lost my focus.
Right.
I ended up just an old drunk playing beer joints in my hometown the rest of my life.
For folks out there who are thinking about a musical career, and we always have a lot of kids that are listening to the show, tell them the kind of work that's involved in trying to be a success in this business.
Oh, Lord, it never ends. It never ends. I mean, here, for example, here we are. You know, I've been home a total of 10 days in the last 3 months. because I've been working on this album and this career. And once the single came out, well, then I'm traveling all over the country doing acoustic shows for radio stations. Radio stations just don't add you right out of the box anymore, because, I mean, I've had 14 number ones and 4 platinum albums, 23 top 10 singles. You would think at this point that anything that I come out with, radio will automatically add to their playlist. Well, that ain't the way it is anymore, because there's so much competition. And so we do things special. We do special things for radio, you know, go do fundraisers and acoustic shows to, because they're all, radio's always having some kind of events for charity. And so we'll go do things like that. And in addition to my touring schedule, which is all the time, you know, always out on the road year round, there's a whole lot of work. I mean, you finding the songs or writing the songs, recording the songs, and then the promotions. It's just, you don't sit back and watch the label promote your record and sell your record. You were out there working with your label as a team, and it never gets any easier. You know, I've been home. I got home the day before yesterday for the first time in 2 weeks. I leave tomorrow morning for about 2 weeks again. And, you know, that's kind of tough when you have 3 little boys that need their daddy at home, and they can't travel with me. It's just no way. So it's not an easy life. It looks glamorous, but you know, it is fun. I enjoy the road. You got to enjoy traveling. You really got to enjoy waiting in lines at airports.
Especially
you know,
nowadays.
Trying to find your luggage.
Yeah.
It's not very glamorous at all. And a lot of times you're up way over 24 hours just to make deadlines and schedules, and still having to do shows and smile for the camera. It's a lot of work. But I still say it beats the hell out of roofing houses.
And you have to talk to people like me, so that's a tough thing, too.
That's part of the job. You know, fortunately, I like to talk about myself.
That's a good thing. Yeah. Well, it's a pleasure talking to you, Mark. And for folks out there who are interested in coming away with this new CD, it's called Saving the Honky Tonk. And, again, you can go to vivitonrecords.com, or you can go to Mark Chesnutt, ChesNutt.com, and pick up a bunch of the stuff that he's put out. It's some great music. And it sounds to me like you're not only putting out the same kind of stuff you took before, but even better than before. So it's getting better, which is even better than it was.
Thank you. I'm glad you agree.
Well, Mark, thanks so much for coming on the show, and good luck with everything. Hopefully we can talk again sometime.
Yes, we will. I sure enjoyed talking to you.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.